Pastoral Care by St. Gregory the Great. Part 2 of The Life of the Pastor. Chapter 1. How one who has in due order arrived at a place of rule ought to demean himself in it. The conduct of a prelate ought so far to transcend the conduct of the people as the life of a shepherd is wont to exalt him above the flock. For one whose estimation is such that the people are called his flock is bound anxiously to consider what great necessity is laid upon him to maintain rectitude. It is necessary, then, that in thought he should be pure, in action chief, discreet in keeping silence, profitable in speech, a near neighbor to everyone in sympathy, exalted above all in contemplation, a familiar friend of good livers through humility, unbending against the vices of evildoers through zeal for righteousness, not relaxing in his care for what is inward, from being occupied in outward things, nor neglecting to provide for outward things in his solicitude for what is inward. But the things which we have thus briefly touched on, let us now unfold and discuss more at length. Chapter 2. That the ruler should be pure in thought. The ruler should always be pure in thought, inasmuch as no impurity ought to pollute him who has undertaken the office of wiping away the stains of pollution in the hearts of others also. For the hand that would cleanse from dirt must needs be clean, lest, being itself sordid with clinging mire, it soil whatever it touches all the more. For on this account it is said through the prophet, "Be ye clean that bear the vessels of the Lord." For they bear the vessels of the Lord who undertake, on the surety of their own conversation, to conduct the souls of their neighbors to the eternal sanctuary. Let them therefore perceive within themselves how purified they ought to be, who carry in the bosom of their own personal responsibility living vessels to the temple of eternity. Hence by the divine voice it is enjoined that on the breast of Aaron the breastplate of judgment should be closely pressed by binding fillets, seeing that lax cogitations should by no means possess the priestly heart, but reason alone constrain it. Nor should he cogitate anything indiscreet or unprofitable, who, constituted as he is for example to others, ought to show in the gravity of his life what store of reason he carries in his breast. And on this breastplate it is further carefully prescribed that the names of the 12 patriarchs should be engraved. For to carry always the fathers registered on the breast is to think without intermission on the lives of the ancients. For the priest then walks blamelessly when he pores continually on the examples of the fathers that went before him, when he considers without cease the footsteps of the saints, and keeps down unlawful thoughts, lest he advance the foot of his conduct beyond the limit of order. And it is also well called the breastplate of judgment, because the ruler ought ever with subtle scrutiny to discern between good and evil, and studiously consider what things are suitable for what, and when, and how. Nor should he seek anything for himself, but esteem his neighbor's good as his own advantage. Hence in the same place it is written, "But thou shalt put in the breastplate of Aaron doctrine and truth, which shall be upon Aaron's breast when he goeth before the Lord. And he shall bear the judgment of the children of Israel upon his breast in the sight of the Lord continually." For the priest's bearing the judgment of the children of Israel on his breast before the face of the Lord means his examining the causes of his subjects with regard only to the mind of the judge within, so that no admixture of humanity cleave to him in what he dispenses as standing in God's stead, lest private vexation should exasperate the keenness of his censure. And while he shows himself zealous against the vices of others, let him get rid of his own, lest either latent grudge vitiate the calmness of his judgment, or headlong anger disturb it. But when the terror of him who presides over all things is considered, that is to say, of the judge within, not without great fear may subjects be governed. And such fear indeed purges while it humiliates the mind of the ruler, guarding it against being either lifted up by presumption of spirit, or defiled by delight of the flesh, or obscured by importunity of dusty thought through lust for earthly things. These things, however, cannot but knock at the ruler's mind, but it is necessary to make haste to overcome them by resistance, lest the vice which tempts by suggestion should subdue by the softness of delight, and this being tardily expelled from the mind, should slay with the sword of consent. Chapter 3. That the ruler should always be chief in action. The ruler should always be chief in action, that by his living he may point out the way of life to those that are put under him, and that the flock, which follows the voice and manners of the shepherd, may learn how to walk better through example than through words. For he who is required by the necessity of his position to speak the highest things is compelled by the same necessity to exhibit the highest things. For that voice more readily penetrates the hearer's heart, which the speaker's life commends, since what he commands by speaking he helps the doing of by showing. Hence it is said through the prophet, "Get thee up into the high mountain, thou that bringest good tidings to Sion," which means that he who is engaged in heavenly preaching should already have forsaken the low level of earthly works, and appear as standing on the summit of things, and by so much the more easily should draw those who are under him to better things, as by the merit of his life he cries aloud from heights above. Hence, under the divine law, the priest receives the shoulder for sacrifice, and this the right one, and separate, to signify that his action should not only be profitable, but even singular, and that he should not merely do what is right among bad men, but transcend even the well-doers among those that are under him in the virtue of his conduct, as he surpasses them in the dignity of his order. The breast also, together with the shoulder, is assigned to him for eating, that he may learn to immolate to the giver of all that of himself which he is enjoined to take of the sacrifice, that he may not only in his breast entertain right thoughts, but with the shoulder of work invite those who behold him to things on high, that he may covet no prosperity of the present life and fear no adversity, that having regard to the fear within him he may despise the charm of the world, but considering the charm of inward sweetness may despise its terrors. Wherefore, by command of the supernal voice, the priest is braced on each shoulder with the robe of the ephod, that he may be always guarded against prosperity and adversity by the ornament of virtues. So that, walking, as St. Paul says, in the armor of righteousness on the right hand and on the left, while he strives only after those things which are before, he may decline on neither side to low delight. Him let neither prosperity elate, nor adversity perturb. Let neither smooth things coax him to the surrender of his will, nor rough things press him down to despair. So that while he humbles the bent of his mind to no passions, he may show with how great beauty of the ephod he is covered on each shoulder. Which ephod is also rightly ordered to be made of gold, blue, purple, twice-dyed scarlet, and fine-twined linen, that it may be shown by how great diversity of virtues the priest ought to be distinguished. Thus, in the priest's robe, before all things, gold glitters, to show that he should shine forth principally in the understanding of wisdom, and with it blue, which is resplendent with aerial color, is conjoined to show that through all that he penetrates with his understanding, he should rise above earthly favors to the love of celestial things, lest, while caught unawares by his own praises, he be emptied of his very understanding of the truth. With gold and blue, purple also is mingled, which means that the priest's heart, while hoping for the high things which he preaches, should repress in itself even the suggestions of vice, and, as it were, in virtue of a royal power, rebut them, in that he has regard ever to the nobility of inward regeneration, and by his manners guards his right to the robe of the heavenly kingdom. For it is of this nobility of spirit that it is said through Peter, "Ye are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood." With respect also to this power whereby we subdue vices, we are fortified by the voice of John, who says, "As many received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God." This dignity of fortitude the psalmist has in view when he says, "But with me greatly honored have been thy friends, O God, greatly strengthened has been their principality." For truly the mind of saints is exalted to princely eminence, while outwardly they are seen to suffer abasement. But with gold, blue, and purple, twice dyed scarlet is conjoined, to show that all excellences of virtue should be adorned with charity in the eyes of the judge within, and that whatever glitters before men may be lighted up in sight of the hidden arbiter with the flame of inward love. And further, this charity, since it consists in love at once of God and of our neighbor, has, as it were, the luster of a double dye. He, then, who so pants after the beauty of his Maker as to neglect the care of his neighbors, or so attends to the care of his neighbors as to grow languid in divine love, whichever of these two things it may be that he neglects, knows not what it is to have twice dyed scarlet in the adornment of his ephod. But while the mind is intent on the precepts of charity, it undoubtedly remains that the flesh be macerated through abstinence. Hence, with twice dyed scarlet, fine twined linen is conjoined. For fine linen, byssus, springs from the earth with glittering show, and what is designated by fine linen but bodily chastity, shining white in the comeliness of purity. And it is also twisted for being interwoven into the beauty of the ephod, since the habit of chastity then attains to the perfect whiteness of purity when the flesh is worn by abstinence. And since the merit of affliction of the flesh profits among the other virtues, fine twined linen shows white, as it were, in the diverse beauty of the ephod. End of chapter 3.